League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Hit on the ground. Beltre goes to second for one, and Bautista. Now there's a fight at second, and Odor smokes Bautista. Now both dugouts are empty. And now Pilar's into it with Odor, and Pilar's going. And there's a lot of animosity out there right now.
I'll tell you, this has been brewing since last October. Bautista went into second base hard, and Odor took exception and started swinging.
And they're still going at it.
Yes, they are.
And you can't blame Bautista one bit. A hard slide, the only way he can get payback. He's being held back by Beltre.
Pretty surprised. You know, obviously that's the only reason why he got me, and he got me pretty good, so I have to give him that, but takes a little bit of a bigger man, I guess, to knock me down. Shows a little bit of, you know, at least the apparent lack of leadership that they have over there when it comes to playing baseball the right way. You know, baseball plays are supposed to be taken care of with baseball plays. But it was pretty cowardly of them, too, to wait till my last at-bat. In my opinion is that the whole situation was mismanaged by the umpires. I already said a couple of things that they could have done differently. Left us as the players to try to take care of it on the field. Yeah.
Did you watch the game?
I did.
I guess when a pitch got away from Matt Bush, and you know, they took it the wrong way, and obviously Bautista slid kind of hard in second base, and Odor didn't like it, and you saw the rest.
Yeah, there's a lot of things going on. It looked like hard slide into second base. These are two ball clubs that obviously are playing hard to win baseball games.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
And what is going on? Welcome to this Monday afternoon edition of the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo's sports leader. Hope you're having an outstanding day today. You probably had a better day than, or a better weekend, I should say, than Jose Bautista did. My goodness, what a dilemma, what a situation, what an occurrence that we have here. And we're going to get into all of that with you this afternoon right here. Bob France with you until 5 o'clock. We'll have drive time coming up then with Mr. Miller. Jim Cushlin is in the house today. No baseball games to go out there and ruin there, Mr. Cushlin?
No, that's the next couple days. Though I had rainouts last week.
Gotcha.
That was fun. Being
yeah, it was it was October 14th, 2015, 7th inning. Game 5, American League Division Series, Texas 3, Toronto 3, two men on for Joey Batts.
We are tied at 3. Pressure to Bautista.
Are we tied? Oh, my goodness. what a game, huh?
What an inning.
It was widely regarded as the bat flip heard round the world Toronto, Canada went ballistic. They went straight up nuclear after Batista hit a nuclear bomb into the upper deck, the second deck, to break that game, five game open, 3-3 becomes 6-3. Batista stares at it, flips his bat, sends the entire city of Toronto and beyond into a frenzy. Now I'm trusting you to let your mind's eye paint the picture for you now, because if you're listening to this sports radio show, then the chances are very, very good that you have already seen this a few different times. So you have to let your mind's eye work for you here as I play you the audio clip of the swing and then the aftermath and the crowd. I set that up, obviously, because it sets up what happened in yesterday's Toronto and Texas rematch. This was what happened yesterday, and I know you know what's going on with that, too. I won't have to set the whole thing up for you, obviously. This was, of course, related to that. It is May 15th yesterday. By the way, the anniversary of large Lenny Barker's perfect game in 1981 for the Cleveland Indians, the last such game in the Indians' history at the time. I want to say it was around the 19th perfect game in Major League history. I think there have been four since then. Maybe it was earlier than that. Anyway. May 15th, yesterday, and of course, what were the Texas Rangers thinking about? They were thinking about October 14th. Help me do my math there. Wasn't that about 8 months ago? 8 months later, the Texas Rangers decide it's time for payback. You see, we have to pay back Jose Bautista and the Toronto Blue Jays for daring not to hang his head and shamefully jog around the bases after he hit the go-ahead three-run home run in the seventh off of Dyson. He should have swung that bat, dropped it or placed it neatly at his feet, and hung his head, run the bases with his head hung down, being ashamed, of course, of doing something outstanding. And those fans, screaming as they were, should have respectfully applauded and said, "Very well done, sir. Very well done, Jose." Just so that the other team didn't feel as bad about being beaten by the man known as Joey Bats in that moment. The Rangers, manager Jeff Banister, using his criminal weapon, and I use that term very, very intentionally, his criminal weapon, Matt Bush, on the mound, in the last at-bat for Jose Bautista, in the last game he will play against the Rangers this season unless they meet in the playoffs, has Bautista drilled all because of the genuine emotion and excitement and exuberance of having done something phenomenal, sending his home stadium into a frenzied panic, into just a fit of euphoria. He had the temerity to show emotion. He had the gall to be excited and throw that bat aside like, "Yeah! Yeah! Let's go!" But baseball, whoa, hey, no, no, no. This isn't the NFL. We don't spike the football. This isn't the NBA. We don't beat our chests after a dunk and hang on the rim. This is baseball. You hit a home run. Shh. You keep your head down and you jog the bases because you don't want that pitcher to be embarrassed. You don't want him to know that you just got him. You're hoping he didn't see it, hoping he didn't turn around and look at it, because then if he sees you're celebrating and he hadn't turned around to see if the ball is caught in left field or if it's sitting in the somebody's soup up in the upper mezzanine level, then he's going to find out from you, and you shouldn't have shown him that. And if he did know that it went out, well, he's already hurting enough. He doesn't need to see you showing excitement and elation to just rub salt in the wound. How dare you? This is baseball. This is a gentleman's game. Let me tell you something. Before we get into, you notice how I haven't even gotten to the slide yet. What happened last October ended last October. That's point number one. Point number two is what happened last October is not a violation of any written or unwritten code or rule or conduct or anything else that baseball might think that it has established for years, because what Jose Bautista did, he didn't stare down a pitcher. He didn't jack one and stand there admiring it for 6 seconds and then do a Ricky Henderson hop going real deep wide down the first base line. He hit it, looked at it. He did pause for a second, looked at it and realized, yeah, I just crushed it, and flung that bat out of the way and began his march around the bases to the adoration of a stadium full of fans. That's not a violation of any code. And if it is, take your code and pound it up your A. Because that is what is supposed to happen when somebody achieves something fantastic in a professional sport. I don't care if it's a soccer goal. I don't care if it's a touchdown, a game-winning field goal, a blocked game-winning field goal attempt on the other side. I don't care if it's a three at the buzzer. I don't care if it's a missed three. And all. Emotion is allowed. There's a difference between planned, choreographed, hot-dogging, and celebrating and embarrassing your opponent the way the NFL finally got tired of with Terrell Owens and others with Sharpies and Hall of Chad Johnson Hall of Fame jackets and all that crap. That's planned. Genuine emotion is always allowed in sports. If it's a game-winning goal in hockey overtime, especially if it's playoff hockey, what, is he not allowed to put his stick in the air? Because that's showing up the opponent and the goalie? No, he's going to put his stick in the air, and he's going to skate around in circles as fast as he can till he gets mobbed by his teammates, and they all have their sticks in the air. This is sports. And to the Rangers manager, Jeff Banister, to their pitcher, Matt Bush, to, of course, shortstop, Rougned Odor, every last one of your sorry A's ought to be suspended for this. You're a bunch of Bush League punks who still can't get over the fact that Jose beat you 8 months ago. It's a new season, and you didn't even drill him the first time you faced him, which you could have done in April. You waited until the last time you faced him, mid-May. Then there won't be any chance for repercussions from one of the Blue Jays pitchers, because both benches have been worn now. Because you threw that Bush League, and I mean that literally, Matt Bush, Bush League pitch, 96 to 98 miles an hour into the ribs of Jose Bautista. You knew they might not be able to throw back at you here because the warning had been given. And hey, guess what? There's no more games against you this year. Now, if you guys keep this up, you're going to have to wait 11 more months until next April to try to get back at us. How cowardly. How unbelievably cowardly. Now, moving on. Jose Bautista on first, down a run. Because baseball, because the baseball gods smiled, I don't know. The one thing I promise you that Jose Bautista, with his ribs stinging and burning, I think it hit his elbow too. It's like it hit his elbow and his ribs. Probably a double shot there. With all of that burning, knowing full well why they did it, knowing full well that a pitch didn't get away from anybody, knowing full well that it was intentional, is probably begging for a ground ball. Begging for a ground ball to the left side so it's a double play ball, and he can go in and express himself. Not to hurt anybody, but as much of a purpose slide as that was a purpose pitch. And he gets exactly what he should get. The baseball gods looked and said, yeah, you were just wronged. This is bullcrap. You just got drilled for something that was not drillable, quite frankly, to put it oddly and clunkily, I suppose. But you got drilled for something that you should not have. And guess what? Here's your chance to express yourself. They threw a purpose pitch at you. Make a purpose slide. He slides at second baseman Rougned Odor. He slides late, yes, but he doesn't come in cleats up. He doesn't come in cleats up trying to take out a knee, gouge anybody. He comes in, makes a late slide the way anybody and everybody who has ever watched this game of baseball, not that particular, the game of baseball, as anybody and anybody who had ever watched it would have said, hey, he's breaking up the double play, which is exactly the way it used to be before baseball overreacted to Chase Utley. And said, oh, no more collisions at second base. You got to slide and be able to touch the base with your hand or your foot or blah, blah, blah. And they, which, of course, he was. He went right over the base, by the way. But before that stupid rule is initiated because of the overreactionary idiots in charge of baseball, including Rob Manfred, who gets high marks from most people on his handling of the major league since he took over. But they allowed this ridiculous rule to be written, and suddenly breaking up double plays is no longer allowed. Prior to that Chase Utley accident, and that's what it was, this would have been just breaking up a double play, and there is absolutely nothing wrong with it. But because of the new rule, that gives Odor, the second baseman, enough license to get up angry, and oh, by the way, before he got up angry. I hope people are aware at the double, or how do I, that's an ugly phrasing, for the attempted double shot, if you will, on Jose Bautista. They already drilled him. That's one. That's the first shot. And then they tried to fire another bullet at him. Because as he came in making that slide, did you see Odor, and if you've watched the play as many times as we probably all have, we're all sports fans, you see what Odor does. Odor doesn't even attempt to throw that ball to his first baseman. Doesn't even attempt it. Odor drops that arm angle down so low, throwing that sidearm almost, I mean, seriously, almost, you know, Dan Quisenberry-like, Kent Tekulve-like. He drops that arm angle down so low because he is trying to literally throw the ball into the face of the charging, sliding Jose Bautista. I'm staring at it again right now. It's on our Facebook page. It's on our Twitter feed. I put them up there a couple of hours ago in advance of this program today. Go to Facebook, 106.5 The Ticket. Go to Twitter, Sports Radio 106.5. You'll watch this video again. What starts it all, of course, is the drilling of Bautista. But then the ground ball to third, Odor covering second. Here comes Bautista. Odor doesn't even attempt to throw the ball to his first baseman. He drops it down because he's trying to hit Jose Bautista, whom you've already punished once with a drilling that he didn't deserve, trying to hit him in the face. Literally. He tried to throw the ball in his face. Proof of it, of course, is watching the flight of the ball. Watching where the ball ends up. It doesn't even come near the first baseman to turn that double play. That ball is bouncing. He threw it so low and so sidearm slash nearly submarine delivery that it bounces two times before it reaches the first baseline, which, by the way, is about 25 to 30 feet up the line toward right field. Because it was never intended to reach the first baseman. It was an attempt to throw the ball into Jose Bautista's face, possibly jeopardizing his entire career. And I'm not, I repeat, not over-exaggerating that. I am not using hyperbole here. I'm not embellishing the play for the purposes of dramatic radio any more than they were dramatic TV when you watch this over and over again or when you get on our webpage and see it. I'm telling you, from that distance, that hard throw, sidearm throw, aimed right at Bautista's head, which would have been inside of his helmet, of course, because it would hit him square in the face, was intentionally aimed there. There is no way to make that throw miss the first baseman that badly. We've all seen double plays being broken up, obviously, by, you know, the runner who's trying to make sure that the shortstop or the second baseman can't turn it and makes a wild throw. Wild throws happen, yes. This is beyond wild. This ball was so low because of that sidearm. As he's going down, I've got to drop my arm down further and further and further to get him, and I can't get him. So the ball bounces twice before it reaches the first base line, about 25, 30 yards up or feet up, up the right field line, far away from the first baseman. And so Odor tries to double up what was done by Matt Bush, the pitcher, drill Jose Bautista. Bautista gets up, Odor gets up, and you know the rest by now. The jawing started. Huge two-handed push to the chest by Odor into Bautista. Bautista stumbles back. And to this moment, I do not believe that Jose Bautista was going to hit Odor. I do not believe it. I've watched it over and over again. And what you see when you see this confrontation take place is you see Bautista wanting to yell at him. I can't say I believe this with as much assuredness as I do believe that Bautista was never going to hit him. But I have an idea of what he was getting up to say as they went nose to nose. Because how do most of these baseball things go? How do most baseball brawls go? Do most of them end up with Nolan Ryan having Robin Ventura in a headlock and uppercutting him 7 times? No. One for each no-hitter he's thrown. Bang, 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 bang. No. Most of them end up jawing, pushing, shoving, bullpen's empty. Everybody just kind of postures, and that's it, because nobody wants to get thrown out. I fully believe that Bautista got up to posture, to say, I didn't. He was, because he was going to defend himself against allegations that his slide was dirty, that he was trying to take him out, and he was going to scream, no, he's not. And second of all, he was probably getting up to say, what the blank? You just tried to hit me in the face with your throw. He was ticked. But the reason I believe that there was no Jose Bautista intent to hit Odor is because when he did draw his arm back, as Odor pushed him, it was with an open hand. What was he going to do? Give a sissy slap? I don't think he ever thought it was going to come to punches being thrown. I think if anything, he was going to be ready to reach around and grab a headlock, you know, the shoulders, the whole thing you always see when you see these things. But Odor, who already was responsible for the second bullet fired, euphemistically, of course, at Jose Bautista, then decided to fire the third. First, you got the drilling from Matt Bush. Then you got the intended throw to the face with the baseball from Odor, and then Odor, of course, hits him with that strong overhand right that just completely lands flush on the cheek and jaw of Jose Bautista, the slow-motion version of which looks like a heavyweight knockout punch. It's the kind you look when you see, you know, Tyson fighting Terrell Biggs or something, or one of those old boxing vids where they show it in slow motion and then they freeze frame it, you know, screenshot it, and you see the fighter's jaw completely displaced, like pushed way over to the other side and the rest of his face all mushed in. It was one of those shots. It was from a fighter standpoint, it was a thing of beauty. And a lot of people today are giving Odor huge credit for what a great punch, what an amazing punch. That was unbelievable. Usually these guys just push and shove, but that's a man right there, boy. What a throw. That was MMA style. Does he have an MMA background? Anybody know? It's clear he's punched people before, because that was no accident. That was no wild haymaker. That was no close your eyes and scramble forward hoping somebody pulls you back. That was a straight fighter shot right there, man. Does anybody know? While everybody's doing that, I'll tell you what I was doing. I was getting ticked off at the Twitter users who were calling Joey Bats, which is the nickname and the Twitter handle for Jose Bautista, saying Joey Bats has a new nickname, Glass Joe, referencing, ironically enough, since I mentioned Tyson a moment ago, the old late 1980s video game, Nintendo video game, Mike Tyson's Punch-Out. Glass Joe was the first fighter. All you got to do is basically blow on him with your fighter, and he goes tumbling to the canvas because he has a glass jaw. Jose Bautista, just the opposite. Jose Bautista took that hard overhand right from the muscular, and again, I'm looking at a freeze frame right here. This dude's put together, talking about Odor. took that hard, closed-fisted overhand right to the jaw and did not drop. Knees buckled a little bit, but stayed up and kept trying to get back at Odor. He was grabbed by Adrian Beltre and pushed away. In fact, kind of, not horse collar because it was from the front, but basically wrapped up and pushed away to stop that right there. But Bautista took that shot and said, really? And I got to tell you, because in case you can't tell, I've made up my mind, obviously, whose side I'm on in this dispute. But aside from that, and that was all objective, everything I just described was objective, because the Rangers were the punks who were just angry because Jose beat them back in October. They pulled a punk move by waiting until the last at-bat of the last time they're going to see him this year. They pulled a punk move by drilling him at all with a 96-mile-an-hour fastball from a guy who's a rookie who has no experience or history whatsoever with the Blue Jays. None. Wasn't even part of this team last year. And by the way, he's also got a criminal history, which we can talk about later. But they use him. And then they, of course, Odor. Clearly, I'm siding with Jose Bautista every way from Sunday on this issue. But that is not what colors my view of this. That punch, as majestic as it was from a team sports punch standpoint, you just don't see those very often. You see basketball, too, the NBA. You might see brawls. You might see fist cocked back, wild swings and misses. I remember Dr. J trying to jab, 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 jab at Larry Bird when they got into it back in 1982 or 3 or 4. But none of them really landed. You just don't see very often what you saw this time. And Jose Bautista took that shot and looked at it and almost said, you hit like a sissy. Because he didn't drop. And he didn't, like, cower. He went right back at him. And I think that's enormous. And I have mad respect for Joey Bat's jaw after watching that whole thing play out. I also have mad respect for the line, because he's the one being tortured on social media. He's the one everybody's saying Joey Bats got lit up, and they're praising Odor for the great shot, because everybody likes a fighter and everybody likes the MMA comparison, and they're just taking shots at Bautista. But you know what Jose Bautista did? Instead of letting the moment own him, he owned the moment with what he said in the post game. And I want to make sure we can all hear this. Give this a listen real quick.
How surprised were you that Odor would throw a punch like that?
Pretty surprised. You know, obviously that's the only reason why he got me. And he got me pretty good, so I have to give him that. But takes a little bit of a bigger man, I guess, to knock me down. Shows
that line right there owned the moment. Yeah, he got me. It was a little surprise. That's why he got me with a good shot, because I wasn't expecting. I was surprised. Like I said, I think Bautista thought they were going to argue. They were going to posture, chest bump maybe a little bit, push and shove, but not that. But, oh, by the way, I guess it takes a little bigger of a man to knock me down.
Pretty surprised. You know, obviously that's the only reason why he got me, and he got me pretty good, so I have to give him that. But takes a little bit of a bigger man, I guess, to knock me down.
I just think that is so perfectly owned by Bautista. In other words, hey, Odor, sissy, you hit like a sissy. I was watching an old night. Hey, Cushlin, you ever see Cliffhanger with Stallone?
Yeah, once, a long time ago.
90s movie. 90s yeah. Movie back when he was, you know, still in like Rocky type shape. Of course, he's always in shape. The Expendables, all those. But anyway, old 90s movie with Stallone, and he was down in the bottom of a cave getting the crap kicked out of him by some big dude. Big bad guy who was demanding to know where the money was. You don't need to know the plot, but he hits him with probably 25 shots, kicks, punches, back fists. I mean, all of it. And he's laying there on the ground bleeding. And the guy says, I'm going to ask you one last time. He's holding a knife now, like I'm going to kill you. And he says, I'm going to ask you one last time. Where's the money? And Stallone just looks up and says, sissy, you hit like a sissy. And that is what Bautista did in postgame.
How surprised were you that Odor would throw a punch like that?
Pretty surprised. You know, obviously that's the only reason why he got me, and he got me pretty good, so I have to give him that. But takes a little bit of a bigger man, I guess, to knock me down.
He took the shot that everybody can't praise enough and did not go down, and in fact kept coming, except that Beltre took him out of the way. But he did. He basically said, you're going to have to come at me or something harder than that to take me down, big boy. or little man, essentially. Take somebody bigger than that to get me.
Shows a little bit of, you know, at least the apparent lack of leadership that they have over there when it comes to playing baseball the right way. You know, baseball plays are supposed to be taken care of with baseball plays. Thought it was pretty cowardly of them, too, to wait till my last at-bat. In my opinion is that the whole situation was mismanaged by the umpires. I already said a couple of things that they could have done differently. Left us as the players to try to take care of it on the field. And I had a hard slide at second base. I could have injured him. I chose not to. I just tried to send a message that I didn't appreciate getting hit. You know, whatever.
I got to tell you, very rare is the time in one of these controversial situations in any sport that I come so far down completely in one camp. And every single word that Jose Bautista said in that postgame was spot on. I could have injured him. I chose not to. I came in cleats down, but I wanted to be a hard slide, let them know that was not cool. And then he tries to throw the ball to him in the face, then punches him. And then, oh, by the way, you know what? Take something bigger than you to knock me down, little man. You know what? And he's right. He said baseball plays should be taken care of by baseball plays. And the umpires need to let it happen. And the other thing he said that he was spot on about, the lack of leadership they have over there. And he means in Texas. And he means Bannister. He means the manager. And he means the veterans. And, yes, every single one of them ought to be suspended for that cowardly assault. I want to hear what you have to say about it. I got a lot of things to talk about today. But I will tell you, since yesterday when I first saw this, I have been fired up. I don't like Bush League baseball. I don't like this kind of crap. I don't like this, hey, we owe you a drilling because you hit a home run off of us in the playoffs and ended our season. And then flip the bat. Why were you excited? How dare you be excited? You just won a baseball game. How dare you be excited about that? Don't you know that that's going to hurt our feelings? To me, the Rangers are cowards. They may have passed, for my money, they may have passed the Kansas City Royals as my most despised team right now in the American League. And I say that with deference to the Yankees because the Yankees suck and they're not even worth my time right now to wait to hate. We always hate the Yankees and always hate the Red Sox. At least I do. But right now the Rangers may have just climbed over the top of that. And oh, by the way, I have never, ever, ever been a big Jose Bautista or Toronto Blue Jays fan. Never. Never hated them, but never had been a big fan either. This is 100% objective analysis. This is crap. I hope that baseball comes down as hard as they possibly can on the Punk Rangers. All right, I want your thoughts on this, too. We'll get them there and a lot more. I know we got basketball to talk about. Game one, Warriors-Thunder tonight. Game one, Cavaliers-Raptors tomorrow night. I know we got the Believeland thing that aired on ESPN. If you're a Cleveland fan, you might be interested in that. If you're a Detroit fan, you probably won't be. But we can talk about that a little bit. Selling ad space on professional uniforms, the first one has been announced. And is it going to be the start of the NASCARization? I just made up a word of professional sports. Uniforms going to start looking like NASCAR drivers, pullovers and cars. Phase one is complete. We'll get into all of that as we continue on the extravaganza right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Be part of the extravaganza right now by calling 866-240-1065. Now back to the Bob France extravaganza on 106.5 The Ticket.
Indeed we are, and we continue right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Thanks for joining us. We are Toledo Sports Leader. Phone lines, let's open them. 866-240-1065. Do you have a problem with Joey Bautista, Jose Bautista? We get into that Joey Bats thing. Do you have a problem with that bat flip from October? When he just hit a walk, well, not a walk-off because it was seventh inning, but a huge, massive blow in a tie game, seventh inning, game five, series on the line. I mean, just enormous. Do you have a problem with that show of emotion? And if so, do you think it was worthy of drilling him May 15th of the following season, last at bat, last game that they'll face each other in this year? Or do you think that the Rangers are a bunch of cowards like I do? And before you answer that, 866-240-1065, answer me this. What do you think of this Punk Odor? If you think he was justified because, hey, this guy just tried to take my legs out, thereby potentially putting my career in jeopardy, thereby potentially putting my livelihood in jeopardy. If you think that he has a point there, then I point you once again to our Facebook page, which is 1065 The Ticket. Facebook, 1065 The Ticket. And I want you to see the most recent post there, which I loaded up about an hour ago, right before we came onto the air. Because Rougned Odor has a bit of a history of starting bench-clearing brawls. There was a video of him in the minor leagues. Kush, I don't know if you've seen this yet, but take a look at it if you can. It's on our Facebook page. He is the base runner this time, and he's trying to break up a double play. And as you watch this thing, you will see that he slides far later than Jose Bautista did in this particular case. In the big leagues with the Rangers and the Blue Jays. I mean, he really goes into that shortstop hard. He's well past the bag, right? And what he does then is he gets up and just tries to trot back to his dugout like no big deal. But the shortstop must have said something because that makes him, Odor, stop right in his tracks, turn around. What are you doing? And then he starts throwing haymakers again. Or not again, but actually prior, because this was in the... This was a game between the Spokane Indians and the Vancouver Canadians of the Northwest League. And this is a one-minute clip. Again, you're going to have to let your mind's eye do the work here, as all I can give you audio is audio of this video that I'm about to play. But I think it's important to hear, to be quite honest with you, just to get you giving an idea of what I'm talking about. My apologies. My apologies. I didn't even have a play-by-play cut. This was just some fan video. My apologies. I thought it was going to be a play-by-play cut they're describing. But I'm telling you what right now. If you've got a smartphone or if you've got a tablet or if you've got a computer nearby or if you're in your car waiting until you get home, go to the Facebook page and look or Twitter. I tweeted it too. Look this one up. The headline of the video is just caught on tape crazy baseball fight. But know this. It is Odor in the Northwest League. He is the runner from first to second. And he slides so late, so well past the bag, far later than Bautista did. He didn't seem to have any concern. Oh, my God, I just freeze-framed it right there. He's literally still on his feet as he is at the bag. He's going to slide so far after the base, way worse than Bautista's. He didn't seem to have any concern about the well-being of this middle infielder's legs, knees, ankles, or anything else. He's going in to try to break up a double play, and it's fine with him. I mean, he is so far past that bag, and then he stops and turns around because the shortstop must have expressed some sort of a, hey, that wasn't cool to him, and here he comes. And he throws a bomb, and it looks like it hits the side of the head of the shortstop here in the same way that he did as the second baseman to Jose Bautista, the base runner, yesterday. In other words, what I'm saying to you is this guy is a straight-up. Now he threw another shot at the second baseman. He's fighting an entire team by himself. There's another one. You got to see this video. He's fighting pretty much the entire team by himself, one shot after another. This is one of these punks that I'm sorry, is I'm just going to say it. He's bad for baseball. He doesn't belong in the sport. He does. The fact that he tried to throw the baseball on the relay to first and hit Bautista in the face is just another example. This guy should not be in baseball. This guy should not be on the playing field, putting other people in jeopardy. This guy is a loose cannon, wild card, even worse than the pitcher Bush, who delivered the intentional pitch to the ribs of Mr. Bautista, and the manager Bannister, Jeff Bannister, who probably ordered that purpose pitch as payback for Bautista getting him hitting that bomb and flipping that bat in October. I'm sorry. These guys got to go. These guys got to go for a long time. If they gave a month, and I know they won't. This is just, you know, emotion talking. But if they gave each of them a month, 30 games, it wouldn't be enough, to be quite frank with you. From Odor to Bannister to Bush, all parties involved here. And Odor shouldn't be allowed back. I'm sorry. All right, let's go to Jeff. Jeff on the road. You are on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Thanks for hanging in, man. Go right ahead.
Yeah.
What do you think about all this?
Well, I don't agree with probably 90% of what you were saying. I don't agree with a lot of it.
Well, tell
Bautista,
me why.
Well, Bautista, what should have happened is this. Bautista should have took the hit, and it would have been over. Last at bat, last time we see it, would have been over, and everybody would have said, he took his
which he
punishment.
Did. Which he did. Didn't he do that? Didn't he do that?
Yeah, and then there was
he didn't glare at the pitcher. He didn't start toward the mound.
And then there was a ground ball at the second base, and it's obvious that he was sliding over the bag to hit the fielder. And, yeah,
He threw the ball at the guy's head. I would too. You would too. If you're getting ready to be taken out, yeah, you do that.
You must be watching another sport than the rest of the world watches, because I have never.
I was thinking the same thing of you. Are you kidding me?
Never in 40 years of watching baseball have I ever seen, other than a pitcher, obviously, trying to throw chin music, which is terrible, too, I have never seen a baseball player fire another ball at the face of another player, ever.
That
should be grounds for permanent banning from the game, and you think that was okay?
I didn't say throwing at the face was okay, but
No, Jeff, you said it was okay and that you would have done it, and you said that I would have done the same thing.
Yeah, you would have done something right during the stop him sliding into you with his fight going right into you.
Except that clearly, Jeff, you have not seen the video because none of those things happen. He did not slide spikes. So, Jeff, I appreciate the call. I got to get some other people on. No, you're wrong. He did not go in with his spikes high. Not at all. If he wanted to, he could have. And as I said, this punk piece of human trash, Odor, is guilty of making the same hard breakup double play slides in his own career. There's a video of it on our webpage right now. Right now. You're telling me that he's going to throw the ball at somebody's face because somebody else is making a hard slide into him, the same kind of hard slide he makes into other guys? You kidding me? Please tell me you're joking. And you said you would have done the same thing, thrown the baseball at his face, and then you would have punched him like that? Clearly, you haven't seen the play, and you have no idea what you're talking about, but I appreciate your call. Cam in Toledo, let's see what Cam says about it. Cam, go ahead. Should the Rangers have drilled Bautista
in the first place? Love the show. How you doing?
I'm sorry, man. I'm doing great. Thanks for loving the show. I jumped in by asking you a question before you started talking. My apologies.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't even hear you. I'm sorry.
That's okay. There's a little delay and sometimes in the connection. My question to you was, do you think that the Rangers were right to drill Bautista in the first place based on what happened in October?
Absolutely not. I mean, the bat flip, I mean, it's a new era of baseball. It's not even that big. It's a bat flip. You know what I mean? It's not like he, you know, flipped anybody off or disrespected anybody. He hit a home run and flipped a bat. I mean,
not just a home run. A go-ahead home run in Game 5, a closeout game, you know, a deciding game in a 2-2 series in the playoffs, in the seventh inning. You know,
exactly. And I mean, he flipped the bat, and I mean, it was like the most tame celebration I think I've ever seen for a bat like that, you know, and it's to retaliate by throwing the ball intentionally at him and hitting him. And not only that, but to be offended when he actually tries to retaliate even in a slight manner. And you know, these guys are professional athletes. I mean, you're on national TV throwing punches at people and whipping the ball at his face. I mean, for a bat flip? Like,
yeah, and you know what else? I'll take that a step further because you know what? You know what the last caller said? The last caller said that he should have just taken the beaning, the drilling, and then it's the end of it. And he did that. But here's the thing. He took the drilling, knew what it was for, probably disagreed with it, but he knows it was a purpose pitch. Intentionally, it hit him for the bat flip. So he didn't charge the mound. He didn't glare. He just looked straight down. He took off his batting gloves and trotted to first base. Then he does the same thing the pitcher did, which is just a purpose pitch. In his case, a purpose slide. Not trying to hurt you, but trying to let you know that you're going to play hard with me, I'm going to play hard with you. And it's done. And all of a sudden, again, you get what Odor did here. So to me, I still am looking for the first thing that Bautista did wrong in this entire situation, and I can't find anything.
It's a bat flip. I mean, the main point is it's a bat flip.
Right.
I mean, it's the lowest. I mean, to retaliate not by beaming him with a, 90 mile-an-hour pitch, which could already injure him.
It was a 98-mile-an-hour fastball. That's what this guy throws. And I don't know what they actually clocked it at or if they can get it across the plate because it drilled him. But it's between 96 and 98. And, again, this is a guy. You know he was ordered to do this by the manager because he's a rookie. He wasn't even part of this last year. This guy's got his own criminal issues and everything else. He wasn't even part of this. They told him to do this. He, of course, trying to make things, you know, getting good with his team as a young guy, did exactly what he was told. And the worst part about it, like going back to the flip itself, and you're right about this, Cam, is if somebody does that tonight in a spring game on May 16th or even on June 29th on a weekend series, just a middle-of-the-season, meaning-nothing game, and somebody jacks a three-run shot off of somebody in the second inning and then flips the bat and intentionally tries to show up the pitcher, that is a very, very different scenario than October baseball, game five, seventh inning, three-run shot to break a 3-3 deadlock when real, genuine emotion takes over. Not showing up pitcher, but just, yeah, you know,
absolutely.
And pumping your fist. And, we got it.
Absolutely.
How can anybody possibly think that's a violation of some code?
And that was, I mean, and it's tame. I mean, like, what is the guy that did the walk-off home run to win the game, and he jumped and screamed, and it's like, it's a bat flip.
Yep.
It's a bat flip.
That's all it is. Thank you, my man. Cam, I'm going to get some other people on real quick. Jerome in Toledo, you are on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. Hey, Jerome, how you doing, bud?
Pretty good, my friend, Bob. How you doing?
I'm great.
You know what?
My
nickname for you now is the Hammer, because you hit the nail right there. Listen,
oh, I love
this
that.
Guy,
I'll wear that nickname proudly. Thank you.
The Hammer, because you're 95% right the part of the time I enjoy listening to your show.
Thank
now,
you, sir.
Back to this. This guy's a punk. He's a punk. And to physically try to hurt this guy, he needs to be put out of the game. I'm talking just like he was on PEDs. Give him 80 games.
Oh, yeah.
Okay?
I love that. They'll never do it. They'll never do
it,
Jerome, because they're not as smart as you and me, but that is, I agree, man. That's a message.
I would be happy if they get to 10. I don't know if they're going to get there or not.
You know what it'll probably be? It'll probably be your standard fighting suspension, which is 7 games. He'll appeal, get it reduced to 5. He'll probably get 5 games off, and that's probably all he'll get.
No. And here's another thing that I've never liked. I'm a baseball purist. I think that there needs to be some changes in the game. Me, he flipped the bat. So what? If a pitcher strikes you out and ends the game, he's out there pumping his fist. He's patting guys and he's celebrating and nothing's ever said. Okay.
That's exactly right. That's 100% right. They can pound their glove. They can pound their fist pump the air or whatever, and it's just fine when they get big outs. But when a batter wins the fight, he's got to be quiet and act like he didn't mean to do that. Sorry.
Last point. Take the DH out, and these pitchers come up to the plate, and they have a chance of getting drilled. It'll stop.
Amen to that.
It'll slow it down.
I'll tell you what, my friend.
Take the DH out.
Jerome, I'll tell you what, my friend, and I got to run here, so I'll let you loose. Thanks for the call, and thanks for the very kind words and the nickname.
I'm listening. Have a good one.
Thank you, brother. Good stuff, man. But I'll say this in closing before we get to the top of the hour break here. That's the one thing I like about expanded interleague play. I never liked tough guy pitchers in the American League who would drill guys without a moment's hesitation because they never have to stand in the box and face one of their own. Somebody, if they get retaliated against on their team, it's going to be one of their hitters, not them. Interleague play, though, and especially if they, with more interleague play, and it's more kind of spread out now, obviously, some of these guys have to stand in the box. And I like that so that they have to take it. But most of the time, obviously, they don't. They play the vast majority of their games in their own league, and they don't have to bat. I'm with you, man. Get rid of the DH. Make these guys who are willing to deal that hard medicine, make them have to take a spoonful of it themselves. You want to drill somebody? Yeah, your time at the plate is coming up, pal. We'll see how that goes for you. All right, great conversation. Let's continue it on the other side. Zach Miles is going to join us. You're going to join us. Kush is going to join us. And it's going to be an even better second hour than it was the first on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Set by Diekman in the pitch, and Smoke hits a ground ball left side. Beltre picks to his left, throws to second for one, Rudy to first, and Batista goes after him, and Rudy pushes Batista, and they're in a fight at second base. Rudy threw a couple of punches at Batista, and the dugouts have emptied. This is a real Donnybrook. This is not just players standing around. There's a big flesh pile out in short right field. Adrian Beltre has a hold of Jose Bautista.
Yeah, it's pretty ugly in the middle there. We can't see it, but everybody's out there on the field, and the punches are still being thrown.
Pretty surprised. Obviously that's the only reason why he got me, and he got me pretty good, so I have to give him that, but takes a little bit of a bigger man, I guess, to knock me down. Shows a little bit of, at least the apparent lack of leadership that they have over there when it comes to playing baseball the right way. you know, baseball plays are supposed to be taken care of with baseball plays. But it was pretty cowardly of them, too, to wait till my last at-bat. I mean, my opinion is that the whole situation was mismanaged by the umpires. I already said a couple of things that they could have done differently.
Did you watch the game?
I did.
I guess Pitch got away from Matt Bush, and, you know, they took it wrong way, and obviously Batista slacked kind of hard in second base, and Odor didn't like it, and you saw the rest.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
It is indeed the extravaganza, and we do indeed roll on as hour number two is underway. It's 4:10. We got you for 50 more minutes of discussion and dialogue, and if we need to, debate right here on the ticket. Don't forget you hit us up on the phone lines at 866-240-1065. Very spirited segment of calls last time around on the Jose Bautista Odor brawl, and I still can't get used to saying the cat's first name, Rougned. I don't even know what it is. What is that? Is that French, I wonder? I don't know what it is. Doesn't matter. But Rougned Odor should be gone for a month. Hell, more than that. I don't think the punk belongs in baseball after all of the things are considered. Bannister should be gone. Matt Bush should be gone. And Jose Bautista should get an apology from the umpires for the way they handled that entire thing. What an absolute mess. Coward's way out for the Rangers. Waiting until the last meeting of the season, waiting until the last at-bat for Bautista, knowing that after they drill him, both benches would be warned, lessening the likelihood that in the last inning somebody will retaliate against one of theirs. They did, by the way. They got Prince Fielder. And then hoping they could put the whole thing off until next year. Coward's way out. And I'll tell you what, I can't talk enough about it. I can't talk enough about the punch. It was a brutal punch. It was obvious. He had done it before. There's no question about it. This wasn't a sissy slap. This wasn't one of the traditional push and shove and posturing that a lot of baseball fights are. In fact, most fights are in baseball and in basketball. It wasn't that. It was a hard shot. A lot of people liken it to a boxer shot. Most people liken it to an MMA shot. And when you see all the MMA punches he threw as a minor leaguer in the Northwest League against pretty much everybody on the other team in a similar but reverse role situation that is on our Facebook page right now, you can see dude is a fighter, and he always has been. He did throw that punch with bad intentions, to borrow Mike Tyson's old line. Or murderous intention, I think, was Tyson's line. But he threw that punch with bad intentions. He knew exactly what he was doing. But worse off, he tried to drill Bautista in the face with the relay throw. He doesn't belong in baseball, and I'm calling it out right now. I've never had a reason to defend Jose Bautista before. Never have. Never disliked him. Never liked him. Just he's a great player in another city that I don't really much care about. He doesn't play for a team I hate like the Red Sox or Yankees or the Royals or somebody. So I've just never really cared. I've never had a reason to defend him, but I'll tell you what. I'm still looking for the first thing he did wrong in this situation, dating all the way back to October 14th and all the way through now, May 15th yesterday, and I still haven't found one thing that he did wrong in this entire situation. Looking for more analysis from you at 866-240-1065, from Jim Cushlin as well, but now from Zach Meisel, outstanding sports writer, covers the Indians and more out in Cleveland for the Northeast Iowa Media Group, cleveland.com, the Cleveland Plain Dealer. And he's joining us now as the Battle of Ohio gets set to begin. Indians and Reds, first couple of games at Progressive Field starting tonight. Zach, how you doing? Good, sir.
I'm doing well, Bob. How are you?
I'm good. I want to talk about the Indians and Reds a little bit, Battle of Ohio. Do you like that whole thing, by the way, two here and then two down at Great American Ballpark? You okay with all that stuff?
No, you know, I just had a conversation with a friend in Columbus who was griping to me today about the fact that they do this. And it used to be you'd play a weekend series in Cincinnati, and then you'd play a weekend series in Cleveland, and they both draw really well and make the trips. And now you do two and two, and you do it on a Monday through Thursday, and you're not going to have that same effect. So I'm not a fan. It's also not that anyone cares about the writers and their challenges, but it's not the most convenient trip because we've got to turn around quick and drive somewhere, and then you're going from Cincinnati to Boston, but you drive to Cincinnati. It's a mess, and it was so much better when it was 3-3, and it was usually a weekend series, and I'm assuming the crowds will reflect that as well.
Yeah, well, yeah, I care about the writers because everything you just said is true. It's bad for everybody. It's bad. What's worse, it's bad for the owners who are turning away good gates doing the way they did it before. As you point out, the attendance is going to be much less on a Monday through Thursday rather than each team having three in their place over a weekend, and people make the trip. I mean, I totally agree with you. We'll talk about that in a moment, but the big story in baseball is obviously no secret. Where do you come down? First of all, with the drilling of Bautista et al., based on the October 14th, 2015 home run and bat flip in Game 5 of that division series, just drilling him at all. And then after the drilling, Bautista saying, okay, you threw a purpose pitch, here's my purpose slide, and where it went from there.
Yeah, someone made the point that this is why the game can't police itself, because there's no end. It's you did this, and I'm going to do this. And there's always a next level of retaliation. I mean, it didn't even stop after the punch, because then Prince Fielder gets hit, and then the bench is clear again, and it's, you know, you've got guys, it's Rangers manager Bannister was, like, vehemently trying to get his team back and get everyone focused, and it was never going to end. I mean, part of me hopes that these teams meet in the playoffs just because it's a good storyline and it's an electric atmosphere, it seems. But the thing I keep coming back to, and you mentioned this, it never should have started. Bautista did nothing wrong. He flipped his bat. The Rangers got beat. You don't need to retaliate because you got bested. So it was a cheap shot by Odor. I liked the way Bautista handled it by saying, hey, it takes a heck of a punch to even knock
a bigger man. He said it takes a bigger man than that to knock me down, which is basically, you know, basically sports speak for sissy. You hit like a sissy. You hit me with the hardest shot anybody's ever seen, and I stood there. In fact, he didn't stand there. I mean, he was trying to get back at him and keep going going at Odor again when Beltre wrapped him up and pulled him away. But, I thought it was awesome that Bautista took the shot, did not drop, and showed an iron jaw, which is just a whole new level of respect. But let's go back to it for a moment again about the bat flip. Everybody has been talking about the code. We all know. In fact, you and I'm so glad to hear you, by the way, agree with me on this, because I don't like arguing with you. Because you're good at it. You're a reasonable, very thoughtful guy who comes up with great arguments. And when we disagree, we've got some Donnybrooks because like I said, you're good. So I'm glad you agree with me on this. We don't have to fight. Having said that, you heard Goose Gossage just a few months ago really ripping Bautista and ripping some of the younger players of the game. For whatever reason, he brought Latin ball players into it. He said something about Latin players being at the center of a lot of this, like Bautista. And so there are a lot of guys who still say the bat flip was a code violation. And my thought, Zach, is if that happens tonight, you know, or in the middle of June or July in a weekend series in a meaningless time and somebody jacks a three-run bomb and does a long stare and a big bat flip like that, that might be one thing, because that's kind of, you know, maybe showing up the pitcher a little bit. But when it's 3-3 in the seventh inning of Game 5 in a five-game series and you just break it wide open in your home park and genuine emotion takes over and you just feel so pumped and you fire that bat away and start to round the bases, when genuine emotion takes over, how can anybody, even old curmudgeons like Gossage, call that a violation of baseball's code?
Yeah, are Philadelphia fans still mad at Joe Carter for leaping in the air after he hit the walk-off homer in the World Series? I mean, It's one thing. I agree.
Our A's fans still make Kirk Gibson for fist pumping between first and second.
Yeah, I understand. There was a game in Cleveland last September where Jose Ramirez hit a home run, and he did a bat flip. And I think he flipped it towards the Twins dugout, and they were not happy. And they talked about it after the game and said it was Bush League. And I understood that because it wasn't a close game. Ramirez was more enjoying the fact that they had walked the guy in front of him intentionally to get to Ramirez, and then he came through. I get that. I mean, I think a bat flip is a bat flip. You should be able to celebrate a home run. Pitchers pump their fists every time they get a big strikeout. I mean, it's part of the game. People make such a big deal out of it. The thing I would like to ask Gossage is, the kid who threw the punch, Odor, is 21 or 22 years old. I mean, is that how you want guys to come up, and that's how you want them to – this is going to be their experience, this kid who's been in the league for a little over a year, and this is – who you want representing your league? I mean, I understand the code and the unwritten rules and all of that, and a lot of that is the older players. But you have here a kid in his second season, and this is what he's doing. And Bautista's been around the block a long time, and maybe he agrees with some of the unwritten rules, and maybe he disagrees with some of them. But there's no place for that in the game, and sometimes emotions things get heated, there's always going to be a benches clearing brawl where the hitter tries to take out the pitcher and you retaliate and you hit their best player the next inning. That stuff's never going to go away, and that's fine. That's just the way baseball is. Hopefully those pitches are hitting players in the thigh or in the backside and not anywhere near the head. But there's no play. I mean, you don't need to be retaliating for something 8 months later and let it escalate the way it did. And so it's not a good look.
Is Jose Bautista right, Zach, on that front when he said it just kind of shows what a lack of leadership they have over there? Is he right? Is this mostly on Bannister? And do you think, because I do, that Matt Bush wouldn't have thrown this pitch on his own, that he was ordered either by Bannister or told, you know, you weren't here with us last year when this went down. You were having some problems of your own, but if you ever have an opportunity, you know, these guys would appreciate somebody sticking up for them. In some way or shape or form, an order was given.
Yeah, and you have to have – that's why if it was, that's just really, really poor foresight, because if you've really been stewing about that for 8 months and you're going to even – who even remembers that? Don't you have enough to focus on and prepare for? And it was a close game. That's the other part that I can't get over. So it's bizarre. And with Odor, I mean, he's a young player. And so tempers flare. He hasn't been around the block. Maybe he's not a kid who – listens to the veterans on the team. I mean, if Ian Kinsler used to play for Texas, and if that's Ian Kinsler at second base, I don't know that any of this happens. Or yeah. If it's Robinson Cano, I don't know if any of this happens. So it's tough. And
well, and not only who he is as far as his youth and what message this sends, that this is what you know, the kind of player you want up here representing you and the kind of guy that's exemplifying what your team is going to be. But he's got a history of this on his own.
Right.
You probably already saw the minor league tape, right?
Yeah.
You know, here's and the shoe's on the other foot here, quite literally, as he is the base runner in that game in the Northwest League. And he slides, I watched it over and over. I got it in front of me now, Zach. He slides way later than Bautista did in this case and didn't seem too concerned about possibly somebody taking out the shortstop's knees or ankles or anything. He was way later, and it was just because he was trying to break up a double play. He knows it, which is why he gets up way past the bag, further than Bautista did in this case, and starts trotting back to the dugout. And obviously the shortstop must have said something to let him know he didn't appreciate that. And bang, it's on as Odor is turning around and throwing on him and throws punches at about four different guys, fighting the entire team by himself. So this hothead has a history of this. And, I what do you think baseball does here? Do they consider all of that, or is this just you fought, Bautista fought, you each get, you know, the same suspension, and upon appeal it'll be reduced, you know, from 7 to 5 or something stupid like that, or is there more serious than that?
No, I'd be surprised to see a suspension in the double digits. It's the silliest part to me is that this is all back to the bat flip. I mean, it's unbelievable because there's such a difference between doing something out of emotion and in the moment than what we saw yesterday. And it's bizarre. I mean, you could have hit someone the first time they played. You could have hit Bautista's first at bat, and this probably doesn't all happen, but you let things escalate. And again, you didn't need to retaliate for something that happened 8 months ago and wasn't that big of a deal to begin with.
Exactly. So, and that's the worst part. It wasn't even a big deal. I mean, he flipped the bat out of pure emotion. He didn't stare down the pitcher and point his bat at him and say, up your butt. You know, I mean, it wasn't even that bad. And that's the worst part about this here. So you don't think double digits. So what are you thinking as far as suspensions? And by the way, does Bautista get one for being the victim of the punch? is he equally responsible since there was a puncher and a punchee?
That's a good question. I wouldn't want to be the disciplinarian, I'll tell you that much. I think part of me wonders, do you want to set a precedent and make a statement here and show that there's no place in the game for this? I don't know. Usually when you see these kind of brawls, and obviously they don't escalate to this extent, but you see if there's a pitcher involved, they'll make them miss one start. You'll get a 5 or 6 game ban. And if it's a position player, it's usually around the same. So, you know, I could see maybe like 8 or 9 games, but it's tough because you are still, and even if it's deserved, you know, you're talking 10, 12 games, all of a sudden you're talking close to 10% of the season, and it can make a big difference. So I don't know. The league hasn't really had a history of you know, pounding their fist down and setting an example. And we haven't seen this in so long that, you know, I'm kind of curious to see how it plays out.
Well, here's a way, guys, as this was just asking, you're talking about precedent and things, and Bob, you're asking if are they going to find a way to punish Bautista in any of this. My question then would be, would they go after the new slide thing?
Yeah, and that's the other thing here. And the players still don't know how they're supposed to slide into second base. And maybe Bautista could say, and I'm sure he did, that he was just sliding and was trying to avoid the guy, and it's so confusing because you don't want to take out a player, yet you got rid of the neighborhood rule. You have instant replay now, so you can't fake it if you're going to tag second base. So the player has to slide into the base where the defender is standing. I mean, it's just terrible, and players and coaches are still a little hesitant about it because you're setting yourself up for injury or controversy, and that kind of factors in here too because, you know, Bautista could say he's just trying to get there safely, and you know, whether he actually was or not is up for debate.
Yeah, and the worst part, we're talking to Zach Meisel, by the way. Zach Meisel, a sports writer covering the Indians and more out in Cleveland for the Northeast Ohio Media Group. It's Reds and Indians today, interleague and Battle of Ohio type play. Tigers and Twins tonight we'll talk about in a bit as well. But, Zach, one more thought on all of this. And when Jim just talked about the slide, all of this a big overreaction to the Chase Utley situation, which was just a perfect storm accident in my view. As to what that was, but with respect to Odor himself, again going back to the minor league thing, obviously it's not something where they can say this is your second offense or this is a another time because it was in another league, it didn't count to them. But I'm just curious as they try to send a message to other teams that these personal gripes, these personal vendettas, 8 months later, can't be carried out like this. I just wonder if they hit him harder because of that. And the fact that, as you pointed out, he is such a young guy that the message should be sent, very, very quickly and early to these guys. This isn't going to be tolerated. It's going to cost you a lot of money and all of the game checks you're going to miss during the suspension. Do you think they come down harder for those reasons?
Yeah, I think they certainly it should be a consideration. I think, I even had one of the Indians' assistant coaches, a couple of reporters were standing by his equipment today, and he joked that, you know, get away from my gear or I'll go Rugie on you, which Rube Ned Odor is his nickname. And so he's already got a reputation, and that's not a good thing to have when you're 21, 22. I think back to the Royals last year, and if you remember Yordano Ventura at the beginning of the season, it seemed like every single time he pitched, he was getting in some kind of altercation with the opposing team. And Trevor Bauer brought boxing gloves to the dugout when the Royals came to Cleveland. And so eventually you've got to kind of send a message to get the guy to settle down. And certainly this went way further than anything with Ventura did last year. But I think you do send a message. And I'm sure the coaching staff is not exactly thrilled with Odor either because now they're going to lose him for a while.
Zach, I lied when I said one more on this because I got to ask you about the throw too. He dropped his arm angle down so low when he tried to make that relay throw to first. I honest to God, as many times as I've watched it now, Zach, I am convinced he was not even aiming at the first baseman. He was not trying to get the ball there. He was aiming at Jose Bautista's face. Bautista was coming in hot, obviously low. He didn't even come in spikes high, by the way, but he came in hard. And he came in a little bit after the bag, Odor literally dropped that arm angle down so low that the throw, which missed Bautista's face that I think he was aiming at, bounced twice before it reached the first base line, which was a good 25 feet down the right field line and nowhere near the first baseman. I mean, it's like he wasn't trying to complete the double play. He was literally trying to hit this guy in the face to add insult to the injury that Matt Bush already delivered with the intentional beaning anyway. It looked like that to me, and that's why I think I'm so fired up about Odor getting a big suspension. It's not just the punch. It's the whole thing. I think he tried to blast him in the face with the throw. Did you see it that way?
I did notice the arm angle. It didn't really click that maybe that was intentional and all of that.
When you watch the ball, watch the second part of the play, you know, because everybody focuses on the actual, you know, the slide and everything that happened there. The follow-through is the ball, like I said, it goes a good 20, 25 feet up the line, and it bounces twice. That's how low the arm angle was. He almost threw a ground ball, like he was if he was a first baseman throwing infield practice. It literally was that low because he was trying to get low enough to hit Bautista. But I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm sure that's something the league will take into consideration too when they're deciding what their ruling should be. It's tough. I wish, you know, you could be a fly on the wall in the manager's office after that game and hear. I'm sure he met with Odor and then they talked things over. And it would be interesting to see if a kid that young knows what he did was wrong and admits to his mistakes and whatnot. And I'm sure in the coming days and weeks we'll hear some statement from him that's prepared by the PR staff that he reads. And I'm sure, you know, more information will come out. But it's just bad all around. And the thing I keep coming back to is what originated all of this frustration for the Rangers was something that they really shouldn't have been focused on in the first place.
Yeah, and that is the worst part about this whole thing is that these bunch of Bush leaguers, in my view, are still mad because Jose beat him. Not because he flipped the bat, he beat him. He beat him, and the fact that he was excited about beating him instead of hanging his head in shame and jogging around the bases quietly with a three-run jack in the seventh of Game 5, for crying out loud, is the fact that they still think there's something wrong with that is beyond my comprehension. In Odor, to me, I just think he's got no place in the game the way things are now. Does he speak English, do you know?
I don't know.
The only reason I ask is because I haven't heard from him yet. You know, Bautista spoke, and we talked about what he said. The manager spoke. Beltre spoke, but I have not heard from Odor, and I wonder maybe, you know, it's got to be a translation type thing if, like some ball players. So I have no idea. All right, really interesting, and we'll keep our focus on that when the suspensions come down and analyze that. Let's talk about the Reds for a moment because they're in town to take on the Indians where you are in Cleveland right now. But I want to talk about a different play, and it's another slide situation, or in this case, a no-slide situation. We all know that it was before the 2014 season they changed the home plate rule,
mm-hmm.
2013 maybe. I don't know how long it's been since then. I think it's a couple of years old. But at any rate... the game on, was this Saturday or was this Friday? This is Saturday, I think. Yeah, Saturday night.
Saturday.
The game between the Reds and the Phillies ended with a tremendous play at the plate. It was a sack fly. Tyler Goodell threw out Eugenio Suarez with Cameron Rupp, the Phillies catcher, taking the throw, and it looked like setting up camp right in front of the plate, which is exactly what the new rule says is not allowed. This is all a reaction to the Buster Posey injury a few years back, much like the thing we saw last night or yesterday was a reaction to the Chase Utley thing. But setting up camp there, and then the throw was right there in the baseline, and he ended up catching it, getting drilled. It was supposed to not have these kind of collisions anymore, but he got drilled by Suarez, and he held on, and replay said, yeah, he was out. There was some question about whether or not the catcher should have been where he was when he caught that ball. The rule allows, as I understand it, and you probably know the book better than me, but the rule allows the catcher to move into the baseline if the throw takes him there, and he's got to catch it to try to make a play, but he can't set up camp there. And it looked to me like both of those things happened. He set up right in front of the plate, right in the baseline, and then the throw happened to come there, and the collision happened, and obviously the runner was out. But there was some discussion there, and there was a replay there. What was your take on that, and how do you like that rule about the catcher, and do you think it's being followed?
I don't think there is, at least I haven't been able to come up with it yet, and we've asked Terry Francona this before. He feels the same way. He will. There is no perfect answer. But this was like the perfect situation, the perfect storm. The game's on the line. This is the play that's going to decide it. And if you're a catcher, you're going to camp out near home plate. And if you're the outfielder making the throw, where's your target? It's home plate. And so, you know, it's almost like you have to teach outfielders to throw up the line or just off target a little bit so that the catcher can make the catch and then apply a tag at the plate. I don't see another way around this where
and that's hard enough as it is. You know, anybody who's ever played outfield knows that's hard enough as it is just to get it in the general vicinity of the catcher. But when it's coming from left field, which this throw did, where's it going to go? I mean, you know, you can't throw it up the first base line just to avoid being near the runner. I mean, otherwise he's going to be safe. Clearly, and the catcher's not going to have a chance. So he threw it basically, I mean, almost on a line right up the third base line. The only place he could, it seemed like, it was left center. And again, the throw was right where it had to be. But I didn't have any problem with the play. I guess I'm just curious because of the rule. The rule says he can't set up there, but he can move there if the throw takes him there. And I thought he set up there and the throw basically was right to there. And if there would have been an injury on that play, I wonder how baseball would be viewing this. Since there was no injury and everybody got up okay, they're just like, all right, batters or runners out, game over. But I'm curious as to how baseball is going to handle that moving forward if the catcher is basically ignoring that rule and saying, hey, I got to go where the throw is.
Right, it could have been a lot worse. They're lucky Suarez kind of hunkered down a little bit, almost in the fetal position when he got there, because had he gone full steam ahead, you could have had an uglier collision.
Oh, God,
Rupp's
yeah.
Luckily he didn't get a concussion. And by the same token, if Rupp doesn't kind of make the catch and gather himself the way he did, we saw Carlos Santana tear an ACL that way. We saw Yan Gomes have a knee sprain last year that way. And obviously with Posey and the collision home plate, and he suffered the torn knee. So there's not going to be a perfect rule, and I'm glad that they didn't rule that the Phillies were illegal and how the play unfolded. It's impossible. You can't teach human instinct, and you can't teach – you never know where the throw is going to take you. So if you're a catcher, and especially in that position, because you're putting the defense at a disadvantage if you're telling the left fielder, okay, you got to throw – off target a few feet, and then I got to take the time to get the ball, go back to home plate. It's not how the game was meant to play. You're not asking the first baseman to take his foot off the bag while he's waiting for a throw on a grounder in the infield. So it's tough. And the good thing is hopefully the new rules have decreased the amount of collisions that we see, but you're never going to get rid of them completely because humans aren't perfect and we don't know how timing is going to work or how accuracy is going to work.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I got to tell you, my original thought on this is that, you know, I don't like any of the new rules because of what you just said. I mean, they can try. I get it. And it's admirable that they're trying to reduce the number of injuries and collisions, certainly. But I also know that it's impossible to avoid collisions at times. And because they've added these new rules, it makes it that much tougher to decipher. And it's that much tougher for the players to figure out, what do I do here? You know, the old days, I've got to score this run. I'm going to try to draw the ball loose from the catcher. And that means I got to hit him. And that's one of the reasons he's wearing gear, in addition to protection from pitching and bats, but also to runners in these kind of situations. I just kind of feel like I wish they'd leave it alone. I think they overreacted in the Posey, and they overreacted in the Utley injury to, I forget the kid's name now, the shortstop, when that went down. But I just think that baseball is, they're trying to fix things that weren't really broken. A couple of fluky things happened, and they tried to change the entire game. All right, let's get off it. And just real quick preview of this four-game series, two at Progressive Field, two down at Great American. Indians are 17-17, five back of the Sox. The Reds are last in the NL Central at 15-22. The Cubs just rolling everybody with baseball's best record. Just the roller coaster continues with the Tribe. Winning streaks, losing streaks, sweeps, almost getting swept, losing two out of three to the worst team in baseball record-wise. I don't know what to expect.
They found their comfort zone. They don't like to stray more than two games over 500 or two games below 500.
There you go. My bad. That's
so,
it, right?
Yeah, I think I wrote today there's like a gravitational pull that the 500 mark has on this team. You would think, and kudos to the Indians for sweeping two series with Detroit and winning 2-3 against Kansas City, but it just doesn't mean as much when you lose 4-6 to Minnesota. And this series is kind of along the same lines. The Indians have four games here with the Reds where they're clearly the better team, and this is a chance to capitalize before they go to Boston and to Chicago for seven really tough games in 6 days. And the last thing you want to do is lose 3 or 4 to Cincinnati and then have to go play two tough teams on the road. So I think if you're the Indians, it's time to get it together and finally try to break free of this 500 hex and win some games and build some momentum.
Is it possible they just can't? Well, Zach, I'm sorry. Is it possible that gravitational pull you wrote about is just what they are? You know, I was talking to Jim about this last week. I think we've all agreed through the years that around the 40-game mark is kind of when we know what a team is going to be for 160. You know, that's the quarter pole of the season, and it's not a hot start anymore or a slow start. That's kind of what you are. Maybe the Indians, as they approach 40, are that. Maybe they're an 81-81 type of team.
Certainly possible. You would think the thing that's disappointing about this team, if you're an Indians fan, is they haven't had Brantley. They haven't really had Carrasco. They've had this weird off-kilter schedule because of tons of rainouts and snowouts, and it's been miserable weather. And it's through all that, they're still off to a much better start than they've been off to the last 3 years. And yet it's still unsatisfying because you could be better and you know you could be better and you're going to get those guys back and things will be better, you would assume. So it's like, yeah, this division's open. It's for the taking. I mean, the White Sox are going to come down to earth a little bit. They already went 2-4 last week and the Indians couldn't make up any ground. And they've got these opportunities in front of them. They're going to have 23 consecutive games against the AL Central to close out the regular season. Well, wouldn't it be nicer to go into that with a bit of a lead instead of having to try to play catch up like they've had the last 3 years? So, yeah, it's certainly possible that this just is who they are. But there is some evidence, 6-0 against Detroit, 2-1 against Kansas City, and it's a small sample size, but they have the ability to play better. We just haven't seen it consistently enough.
It's also a sample size, by the way, since you brought it up. It's also a sample size that might not mean a whole lot, given the fact that everybody's beating Detroit. 6-0 yeah. against a Detroit team that is sitting here possibly contemplating, and, you know, we're here in Northwest Ohio and close to Detroit, and, you know, there's a lot of scuttlebutt in Detroit that that Brad Ausmus, you know, could very well not, you know, not be long for this job, that Alavila may say, hey, we got to pull the trigger early here, because they're sitting there at, what is it, 15-22, and I lost my standings page. But at any rate, they're obviously scuffling and struggling, and so I don't know how much those wins over Detroit mean as they would have if the Tigers were what we thought they were going to be as the season started. 16-21, there it is. But yeah, that's not that great of a team right now. In fact, the whole Central in the middle pack there is all at about 500. Well, Indians and Royals are anyway, and then you got the Tigers. Only the White Sox are playing that well.
Yeah, I just think the Indians are 11-6 against the AL Central, and if you would have said they'd be 11-6, I think they'd take it.
Heck yeah.
Then if you would have said, okay, well, they would be 10-2 if they weren't playing the Twins, then I think that's where the frustration comes. They're not taking advantage of beating the teams that they should. And this is a team that went 32-43 in the division last year. They had a losing record against all four division opponents. And so finally, they've struggled against Detroit mightily the last few years. You're off the schneid there. You have a good start against Detroit, and it's Minnesota is the team that you can't seem to figure out. That's frustrating, and it goes to show why this team is where it is and isn't farther up in the standings.
Have they played the Sox yet?
They're 1-1. They had a series in Chicago. It snowed all 3 days. It was miserable.
Oh, would have been early on, like first or second week. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I was wondering because, you know, the White Sox obviously have the best record in the American League or tied for it, I guess, now. I was just wondering when we get our first look at them. But you're right. I forgot about that very early, and it was during snow time. Then again, this weekend was snow time in parts of Northeast Ohio over there. Last thing, Zach, did you watch the ESPN? I'm sure you did, the 30 for 30 on Believeland, all of the heartbreak and torment of years and years and years of the three major professional teams in that city, my hometown, your hometown, Jim Cushlin's hometown. For all of the Cleveland Indian Brown and Cavaliers fans listening, what were your thoughts on 30 for 30?
Yeah, it's interesting because Cleveland fans have this, and we could talk about this for hours and hours, the plight of the Cleveland fan and the complex that Cleveland fans have and how you can't make fun of Cleveland fans unless you were born in Cleveland. And it's interesting. And we relived all the heartbreak that Cleveland fans have suffered through. But I wanted more just what it means and why I did a series in 2014, when it was the 50-year anniversary of, it's the 50-year drought, essentially, a week-long series.
Last championship.
Yeah, and instead of just reliving, here's what happened, and here's John Elway, and here's Art Modell, and here's Jose Mesa, that's not what fans care about. And if the rest of the country isn't up to speed on all that, then that's their fault, and they can do their own research, or you could limit how much exposure you give to that. Mm-hmm. But I want to know what keeps the hope alive. Why is Brown Stadium still packed nonstop? Why do radio stations in Cleveland, in particular, talk Browns quarterbacks in May and in June, July, August, September? So what keeps that hope alive, and just what's it like to be a Cleveland fan besides just the heartbreak? Because Cleveland fans see the montage anytime they turn on ESPN. But the rest of the world just sees the heartbreak and says, oh, pity Cleveland. It's that, you know, that's blue-collar city that nothing goes right and it's always gray. But there's more to that, and I wish it would have gone a little deeper, and I know they were limited to 90 minutes.
Zach, I think that's spot-on analysis. You know, I mean, because the title is Believe Land.
Mm-hmm.
The inference is, despite all these bad things, here's how we keep hanging on, and here's our hope, and this is what we know is going to turn it around, and this is why we buy in, and we're still there, and we don't give up. It's what makes us and this place different, because we still believe. We didn't get the hope part. All we got was the heartbreak part and the litany of terrible things. And where's the believe part come in? I didn't hear that either.
Yeah, there's more to being a Cleveland fan and being a native Clevelander than, hey, you've suffered a lot. And people ask me, what's it like to be a sports writer in Cleveland? And they just want to hear the old funny line of, well, it's depressing, or there's a lot of suffering to cover. But there's more to that. And you talk to people and you see, okay, there's a reason that this family has had Browns or Indians tickets for four generations. And they keep going back. There's a reason that this family flies from Paris, France, every Sunday Browns home game to see the Browns play, even though they know they're going to lose. I mean,
those are stories that needed to be there. Those were stories that needed to be included, and they didn't. And that was disappointing. And, oh, by the way, despite all of that, they also missed a whole bunch of really good stuff that was bad that they didn't. You know, the 07, 2007
sure.
ALCS, a 3-1 lead with CC Sabathia and Fausto Carmona coming up next, for crying out loud. They would have thundered against the Colorado Rockies. They would have destroyed them in the World Series and other lost opportunities. A lot of stuff they didn't get in there, too. So, anyway, hey, Zach, great analysis. Thanks. I know you got a baseball game to prepare for out there. I appreciate all your time. Thanks so much for the insight. We'll talk to you again real soon.
You bet, Bob. Sounds good.
All right. Thank you very much. Zach Miles will joining us out there at Progressive Field, where the Indians and the Reds will do battle in the Ohio Battle of Ohio tonight, if you will. And this, of course, the song they began Believe Land with. Burn On, Big River. Burn On. Randy Newman started that out last night, like the movie Major League. So, all right, we're going to take a time out here and come back and wrap it up with Jim Cushlin's thoughts. Your thoughts, if we can get you on the line as quickly as possible as well. Maybe on that series, if you saw it, if you were interested. Not series, that film, I should say, that 30 for 30. And maybe a little preview of tonight, game one out west, to Warriors and Thunder, as we continue on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Once again, it's the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Yeah. Winding it down, wrapping it up. I don't know. Pick your way you want to describe that. It's 4:53. That means we've got 7 minutes to go until Miller and Drive Time coming your way right here on ESPN 106.5. The Ticket. Kush, I'm going to have to flip a coin here. Do I offer a few more thoughts, plus the manager of the Blue Jays, John Gibbons, on the big topic of the day, which, of course, is Joey Bats getting plunked by the Rangers and then getting clocked by Odor. Do we hit a couple of that and play that audio, or do we just discuss for the last couple of minutes 30 for 30 in Believe Land?
Well, I mean, I do have thoughts on the second one, definitely. And now let's do the second one, because I do have a few thoughts on
this. Go ahead. Tell me what you thought. And by the way, anybody else, I've only got, I don't know, four or five minutes to take calls here if we have a chance. We'll shut Jim up, and I'll stop talking if you have thoughts and you want to get in on Believe Land, if you watch that, especially if you happen to be a Cavs fan living out in Northwest Ohio or wherever it is that you're listening right now. But meantime, we'll listen to Jim. Go ahead.
Yeah. First, real quick, my only two real thoughts on the whole brawl thing. Yeah, the juvenile part of me, it was nice to see somebody actually land a punch in one of these. The premeditation, and it seems so obvious. That to me is the real indictment here. That's the biggest problem I have with that whole thing. As for the movie, C-. I mean, I understand you can only fit so much into 90 minutes, so there was obvious stuff missed. I'm not gonna eat their lunch for that one. But they needed more guys. I mean, The same types were there, just too much. They needed more guys to explain that. I thought Meisel at the end had it perfectly. Where they need to point out where the hope part is, the believe part was, and not just the litany that anybody can, you know, research if they decide to do the time. And then, so you needed more local guys. You need more fans. You need more people than just the few they were interviewing too.
Yeah, they
over
had
the course
two
of that.
Guys.
That was the real problem.
They had two guys who did the commenting who dominated the entire event. Scott Rapp,
yes,
who was somehow elected spokesman of the fans.
Right.
And by the way, Scott Rapp is also the author of one of the most controversial titles of a book in recent years, especially sports books. He's the author, after LeBron James went to Miami, who wrote the book called The Whore of Akron. called him the whore of Akron, and who was just lambasted him. And there he was on 30 for 30 last night, the lead voice in praising LeBron for coming back home. And,
right.
You know, it's like a college recruiting trip, you know, or whatever, going away to college and finding yourself and then coming back a better person and all this other stuff. But
yeah.
They never mentioned whore of Akron during that entire event, which I thought was interesting. But him and then the one host, a radio host out there in Cleveland, a guy I know, nice guy, but they just had too much of him. I wanted to hear from other fans.
Exactly, and not just the video clips from the nights of, from the old news footage that even I remember seeing as a kid, most of those.
Right.
You needed to expand on that, and that would have helped tie in to the where the believe part comes in. It's really hard to explain to people, I found over time, particularly those who aren't from the area. And so those were my biggest problems with it. Again, I understood the fact, you know, you brought up 07, for example. There's, you know, 10 different other things seemingly for all three of the teams. I'm not going to eat their lunch over. There's only so much you can throw into the 90 minutes and try to comment on. But if you had more fans out there, I think it would have helped the believe, the hope part of it, which is implied, as you correctly pointed out, with the title and never really gotten to. Oh, and my last one. Sorry, I'm going with this. Too much Modell, too. I had no intention of wanting to see Modell's son. And I'm sorry, this was my exact reaction while watching this when he asked the part at the end, what other pound of flesh do you want? And just without hesitation, looking at me, staring at the TV, watching this, saying, yours.
Yeah, you know what's interesting also? I agree, there was too much David Modell and too much praise for Art Modell.
Yes, they just, that, you know, annoyed me no end.
Especially given the fact that they're talking about a city and a sporting culture there that's been kicked in the teeth for so long. Focus on the teeth kicking and then the believing in the future. Don't give this guy enough apologists there saying why it was okay for him to do what he did. But the other thing is, too, they were just missing so many prominent voices. When they did Red Ride 88, how was Ozzie Newsome not interviewed and talking about that? The pass was intended for him.
Clip.
How are they not going to Sam Ratigliano, who still lives in Cleveland and who's on media radio shows all the time? He's easily available. How are they not showing Sam about why you called that play and didn't trust Cockcroft to kick the field goal there? Don Cockcroft.
You mentioned on Twitter, a lot of it was the general point of it. Some laziness in there. Totally true.
That's what I wrote all morning long as I give my online Twitter review of this.
So I'm bummed.
Cockcroft is also
still
in Cleveland. Cockcroft is out there in Cleveland, Jim. And he is also a media grabber because he wrote a book a couple of years ago. He's trying to get anybody and everybody he could to promote his book for him. He would have talked absolutely about how it felt that Sam would not let you kick that until he took one more shot, and look what it ended up doing because he didn't trust you to make it. All of those guys, Sipe, Bernie being released by Belichick because of diminishing skills. How's Bernie not being interviewed for that thing? It was so...
Yeah, he so would have talked, and nobody tried to contact Kozar. Come on.
And you know what else? I would be willing to bet you, because I've seen him in other ESPN features, little documentary stories, Belichick would have talked too. He would have talked about this from his seat in New England, I promise you. I thought the whole thing was it just kind of sucked. I gave it a D+, and that's where I'll end the conversation.
C- for me.
Because Mike Miller is coming up next. He takes over the conversation on Drive Time. We'll see you tomorrow.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.